Douglas real
ears. As I say, the French were dependent on the Maginot Line. There were very, very strong fortifications, and they had a good army, plenty of men, and they thought, well, let them come, sort of thing. We never got no much, you know, the man on the ground never does. It passes down from headquarters, and the higher ups know what's happening and what's going off, and they're down to perhaps company commander, but once past that, you just sort of obey orders. You don't know where you're at, what you're doing. You just say, well, I've got to do this, and that's it. You're just part of a bigger plan. So,
was there any defensive positions, any digging in?
Oh, yes, it was. So we dug anti-tank ditches, and just in case, I suppose, that he got through. But this place called the Ardennes, a lot of forest, thick, heavy forest, you couldn't impenetrable, more or less. But we didn't realise, or at least the tank warfare, the type of warfare we're going against. We hadn't a clue. We thought that they'd be coming marching, and we'd fight them, and sort of. We didn't know exactly, but we hadn't a clue about what they called blitzkrieg. Eventually, when it did happen, of course, we got a shock. We didn't realise what it was going to be like.
So, how long did this period last?
About 6 months. Well, getting there was 4 or 5 months. It got nice and hot and warm, and we were having a good time, really, on the whole. We had plenty of money to spend, you know. We could let this from home. We got a regular postage, apart from the sanitary side of it, and that sort of thing. You were having enjoying it, more or less. Once the weather warmed up, it was cold at first when we went. And then, of course, Germany attacked France. Well, they attacked Belgium. They attacked Belgium.
What happened there? Were you still in the same place?
Eh?
Were you still in the same place?
Yes, we were at Gondi Court until they attacked Belgium. And then, of course, we were marched up from Gondi Court there.
Can you remember when that was, when that happened?
It would be in May, sometime in May, I think.
How did you find out? What happened?
Well, we were just told to get ready. We marched off, get all your kit into your platoon, ready for a move. And we moved up, what was Lille, I think it was. And, of course, they were moved into position, you know. We didn't know what was happening, but we knew that the Germans had attacked. Because you didn't get much news, but apparently they had lines of defence and one thing and another, and they knew what they were doing. We were just a man on the ground, see, so we didn't get a lot of information. But we knew that we were going to go into action. We had an idea of that.
What was the men's reactions to that? The news that you were going into action.
Oh, we were ready for it. We were well trained, we were fit, well fed, and we were ready for it. I was, most of the men were. So damn, you thought, well, it's got to come. We'll show them what fettle we are, what sort of men we're made of.
So there was no great feeling of apprehension, or
no, not a lot. Of course, there is a bit. You know, there is a bit. You're not sure what you're going into. It's a strange situation, and we hadn't been under fire before. We had that to look forward to, sort of thing. And then we were at some of this, and we got news that we had to go somewhere. We had a forced march. We marched for about 8 hours. It broke through somewhere, or it was very, very, the information you got was clear that the Belgians had collapsed or something. We weren't sure what we had. This march, and I remember I was a pretty, the blood was running my boots. We marched and marched, it was about 48 hours, almost non-stop. I was just stopped for one meal, somewhere near Arras we had to go. And I had to keep putting men in the platoon truck to ease them, to the ones who, you know, because they weren't, some were older men, some were fit men, some had good feet, some had bad feet. But we managed to keep up and keep going, and we got to where we want to be. Eventually, and then of course we saw the refugees, hundreds of people, the roads are crammed with people. I wonder what was happening, you know. You just didn't know what was happening. We didn't see many aircraft, they were further forward. I think the regular battalions were then in action. 2nd Battalion, Durham's, there was only 2nd Battalion. They were in action somewhere near the Belgian frontier, I think. But we hadn't got into action by that time. And I remember that the houses were empty. And the builders, oh yeah, John, get the opportunity to house, allocate section here, section there. Because people just left everything. You see, they'd had indoors of it in the first, where the older ones who must have known what was going to happen, sort of thing. And I thought, well, good God, this. Just left, you know, houses.
Must have been a strange feeling. It's
very strange to me. I thought, well, and of course I had to tell the men that you mustn't touch anything, it's looting. I said, you'll be shot. Well, they thought they could just go into people's drawers and have a look. And I said, you mustn't touch anything. And I said, oh, you'll be shot. And I said, I'll be the first one to shoot you. I said, this is people's homes. So they were all right, they didn't, they might have picked the odd thing up, like, but. But that was only for one or two nights, I think, one night, two nights. And then we went then up to, I remember the big monument where the Canadians lost a lot of, the Canadian monument near Lille. And that's where we formed up for to go into action first, when we first went into action, not. And I remember a big airplane coming over and everybody firing at it. And there was smoke coming from it. I don't know what, but later on we got, it was one of ours been firing at. Because that was, you were worked up a bit, you know, and so it could have a go at anything. And then that's when I first came under gunfire. Cannon fire, you know. When we marched along that road, I remember it. Into our first action. That's where 31st dead Germans. There was two of them, and the Bren gun carrier must have caught them. You know, they were very up and down, sort of. I must have cut one of them. Flatly, too, there were SS men in black uniforms, motorcyclists, be recognised, you know. And they were lying in the ditch. And that's where I first came under. They were shelling us, like, you know, moved up. Because we were behind the real, you know, quarter of a mile behind. The real, then we've caught up with them and we went into proper action then. They had dug into a British cemetery And I remember the equipment. When I saw the equipment I had, I was a great big Studebaker troop carrier. So it was a big troop carrier, and I must have met him, and the carrier on about 40 troops. And anyway, they dug themselves in a British cemetery, and we had to root them out. So we went into action. We had one tank, the French tank, where they dug it up, ancient thing, but it helped. And it was a bit of a deal with that, like, you know, the lads didn't like them being in the British cemetery, because it was a hedge, it was round, you know, and they dug in.
Well, First World War.
So there was about 40 of them, but only about 8 came out of it. 2 of them were badly wounded. I had to stop the lads from killing them. I said, the prisons are wars. But you, when people are firing at you, it's, you know, you, but we equipped it ourselves, we knocked them back and back, advanced a good way. And I remember I sent Corporal Heavysides back with the prisoners. I says, you go back with the prisoners. Matty Heavysides it was. He was upset. He hadn't took it so well. He said, send me back with them prisoners, Sergeant. He said, would you scared? You know, he's swearing. I says, right away. I says, you take them back. And I says, you can come report back when you get them to somewhere back, further back, some village, somewhere. And I remember there was an aircraft came over there, the Storch, I think it called us. Very slow flying thing. We had to go at that, like, but I don't think we hit it. And we laid up there, and I couldn't get any information. We could hear the gunfire, and further over there were pretty heavy battle going off nearer to Arras. And then I could see the tanks further, about a mile away. Their tanks there had some tanks, but they didn't put an attack in against her. Next thing I knew, they'd went round her, were behind us. So we had to get back. And from then on, it was just chaotic. And get back to this village, and in the middle of the night, and there was Germans in the village shouting. There was fighting going off, and one of them grabs, "Get on the truck! Get on the prune truck!" It was whose truck it was. One of headquarters trucks. Because my truck had been blown up. The shell landed on, blew the bloody thing to bits, all the equipment and everything, and. I jumped in this truck and ended up at, I should think it would be, and it was a brigade headquarters, a battalion headquarters, way back. And of course, they grabbed me, wanted to know what was happening. And I told them, I said, look, I said, they've got marvellous equipment. I says, we cannot match them. I says, they've got tanks. I was a bit steady to Sergeant. He said, give us some whiskey. He gave us a big glass of whiskey. He says, Daddy, just don't go around saying things like this, you know. I pulled myself together a bit. And I said, well, I've got to get back to me equipped, to me unit. So eventually they gave us, put us on a, it was three big lorries, and an officer in RSC, and they put us with them. I had five men. There was Corporal Thompson, suppose. And we the sent us out, but by then the city was absolutely fluid. You didn't know where you were. You didn't know nothing. And went with this, and he was where the hell he had gone to, I don't know. He was a captain in charge, because the RSC weren't fighting troops, so they didn't class themselves as fighting troops. And with them going along, and he pulled up, and I got on this motorbike. I says, "You had a motorbike." I said, "Give me that motorbike." I said, "I'll scout ahead and see what the hell's." And I went up and I saw these Germans, and I come back. I said, "Look, get a roadblock up. Pull your wagons across the road." And they didn't know how to fire. They had rifles, and they didn't know how to fire them. They didn't know how to load them even. So I sent my men, I says, "Look, get them on. Show them how to use the rifles. Show them how to load. And how to," I says, "point the rifle, pull the trigger." I says, "That's as long as I can get them." And I put the roadblock up, dug some trenches. And of course, the captain, he had no bloody clue. He was an A fighter. And they didn't attack. There was no tanks. It was just German soldiers. And whether they recognized the control or what, I don't know. But they didn't attack or anything. And of course, after a while, I said, "Wait, they seem as though they've gone somewhere else." He says, "They've maybe just been recognizing." But he wouldn't let me go, that captain, because I'd given him a defense. See, I mean, I'd showed these men how to fire the rifles. They hadn't a clue. They had rifles and they had ammunition and they couldn't load their rifles. They were RSC. So this was the situation, that they didn't consider themselves to be fighting troops. They weren't fighting, they were supply.
So were units mixed up?
All mixed up. And the next thing I knew, he wouldn't let us go. I said, "Well, I've got to get back to my unit." I said, "I don't know where I had some faint ideas that they'd be still, but of course they'd been dispersed. In fact, a lot of them were dead and a lot of them were captured. There wasn't any battalion left as such. I don't think there was much of a brigade even. I think it was all they had. Fifth Columnists. They'd been bred there and born there. They were German fathers, you know, from the First War sort of thing. And they were in the pay of it. And they were setting out lies. Oh, saying the Germans are here and confusing anybody. The whole situation was an absolute shambles.
So you didn't know what was going on?
You didn't know what was going on or nothing.
So where did you take your orders and where was the control?
There was no order. I just had this captain. And as I say, I wanted to get back. But he... "Oh, no, you stay with me, Sergeant, you stay with me." He had somebody to defend him, see? It was just as well I did, because he did keep us there, otherwise I probably wouldn't have come back alive. And eventually he must have got orders, I don't know, but to go back to Dunkirk. And we went back, and then we came into the ring defences. And
how did you get back to Dunkirk?
Eh?
How did you get back?
Put on these lorries. He kept us with him till he must have got orders from somewhere to.
What about other units? What were they doing? What about other units? Were they all pulling back as well?
I met one man, one or two. I met was Arthur Sams, one of my men, and he said he'd come through on a French tank. And I met him, and I remember you had nothing to eat, and I used to go and take them in to scrounge around and see what would get to eat, because there was farms being deserted. I remember I got a big pail of eggs, 7 or 8, 10 eggs, and we didn't know whether they were adult or fresh or what, so we just cracked the bloody lot in a pan and mixed them up and shared them out. And that was the sort of thing, you know, we might find a bit of bread, you know, go in the house and look for food, anything that was in the larder, pantry, to keep going, because there was no supply, everything had broken down then, I think. It was, you didn't know where you were, and out was needing the orders as you'd, and I just had to stay with this column, this three trucks, and this captain, RSC captain. He floated around the country, went here and there, and then he must have got orders to go back. And Dunkirk, of course, by then was completely surrounded. In fact, it had fallen. We ended up at the coast about 5 miles, well, 3 or 4 miles further up, a place called La Panne Sand Dunes. It was just, and it had been a little holiday place. It was like a little place. It had been a cafe, you know, one or two bits of huts and things. Obviously, being there just for a seaside place. And that's where we landed, because there was a defence, and they grabbed me straight away for the defensive positions, my man, and we were there with them. It was guards, it was all sorts of soldiers. It was machine gunners, some of the Northumberland Fusiliers was there, there was guardsmen, there was Lincolns, it was all sorts. And we just had these positions to fight to keep them back, but they didn't attack. But you had the Navy. I think that they didn't have tanks. They didn't have tanks. They had one or two tanks, but I think the Navy blammed up a bit. But he was so far in front of himself, and he is no way that he was any better than us when it came to the man-to-man. He'd been trained with certain way, tanks do this, that, and we hadn't been trained that way. So he was at a disadvantage when it came to fighting fair and square. But he did concentrate, they were concentrating more on Dunkirk. They were still fighting, we could see Dunkirk, and the smoke was going up and that, and eventually, we got onto the beach, and there was Stuka bombers. But the thing was, they had dived down. They're a very, very frightening thing, screaming down. But they come down like this, and of course the bombs went in, and they went into the sand, and then they blew up. So you were pretty safe, unless the bomb hit you. See, if it had been hard ground, and eventually I came back the last boat that left. It was the 5th or 6th of June. HMS Douglas had been an old destroyer or something, or some sort of ship. It was HMS, I know, and That was it. I got on there. And I remember I went up beside the funnel, and I went to sleep, and I woke up. There was a sailor that woke us up. He said, "Are you all right, Sergeant? Are you all right?" But I said, "I'm just tired. I hadn't had any sleep for days. I hadn't had nothing to eat for days. I was absolutely demoralised. We'd been beaten."
How long had that taken from you first going into action to being evacuated? How long?
Well, it took a couple of weeks or so now. But I remember I was absolutely demoralised. We'd been beaten, retreated to Hyde to France, and that went down badly with me. Like I was surprised oh my God, then the welcome we got, everybody was, come on, they're giving you tea, the train, we'll put on a train, and the train was stopping, they were giving you tea and something to eat, women and other stations crowded. So I felt a bit better then, like, you know.
How many of your original unit were still with you when you were evacuated?
I had about six of them. Six of them from my from C company. Two of them weren't in my platoon. I had five in my platoon. There was two. A long time ago, I remember them. Lance Corporal. Down the bottom here. I cannot remember names. Arthur Sams. I can't remember the names, and that was a long time ago. But they were glad to get back, like, you know. It was been through a bit, like, you know. It's, and we ended up in Winchester. That's where we went. Sent us to Winchester. Put us in a place. Then I slept for 48 hours. I hadn't had any sleep. Years, man.
How did everybody else react? I mean, you said you were obviously you were quite devastated by what had happened. Was everybody else? Did everybody else feel the same way?
Most of them were.
Did you know what was going on? You mentioned Dunkirk. Did you know what was going on at
Dunkirk? We seen the smoke, and somebody said that's Dunkirk. I hadn't a clue where we were at or anything, but just little pan. Sand dunes. There was a place called Sand Dunes. It was up the coast, about 2 or 3 mile up north of Dunkirk. There's quite a few soldiers on the beach.
I was going to ask how many soldiers were there.
They drew the defence line in, tightened it up as they were taking them off, you see. The colored maize, I say, for defence, but they drew back and back as they were evacuating them, see. And after about 3 days, we got there. We got on the beach, and we had these boats. It was night time when I left. Like, it was night time. I think it was the 6th of June when I Dunkirk by then had fallen. I think. It was finished. There were still a few left on the beach, and I came. There was still one or two. A lot of them wounded, ones that didn't get off, wounded, you know.
Were you under attack at that time?
By aircraft. Stukas. But not. I think they must have pulled the soldiers back away, because they must have pulled them to mop up in Dunkirk, because there wasn't any Germans there at the finish. There were not.
So the only enemy activity.
But they didn't
was
attack. They didn't attack. Fortunately, they didn't put any bigger bad attacks there, heavy attacks, because they hadn't any tanks or anything. You see, and they were you could see some soldiers in the distance, 700-800 yards. But they were content, I think, to not. They knew they'd won. They weren't going to throw their lives away, sort of, by putting an attack in, I suppose. That was my estimation of the situation, because they would have had heavy casualties that really attacked in strength. Of course, we were ready for them, but we had a good defensive line. And as I say, we pulled it back, and then they just didn't follow up. I remember in Dunkirk that the sea was like a mill pond. Lovely hot weather, and it was a morning, and I remember wherever you went, green, green on the sea and the moon. It's beautiful, it was. I remember that. We launched three boats, boat loads, and then I brought the boat back, like, you know. And then I said to Arthur, I said, we're getting on this one. Arthur, I said, we didn't get on this one, we'll not get on at all. So we couldn't, we went in with it, like, and got on the ship, and it sailed away.